It's Friday, October 21st, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians front office and manager Terry Francona wrapped up the 2022 season with a couple of media sessions today at Progressive Field. We found out some things that maybe we weren't entirely clear on, but one big thing, one big takeaway from those meetings was Terry Francona will definitely be back to manage the Guardians in 2023.
Yeah,
hang on.
Okay.
But one thing we definitely know for sure, Terry Francona will be back to manage the Guardians in 2023.
That was one of the first questions asked to, of Francona, Chris Antonetti, and Mike Chernoff, and they all seemed pleased that that the answer was yes. It's a little unusual. We didn't get the length of the contract I knew we weren't going to get the terms, but usually you get a length of the contract. Tito's 2-year extension expired at the end of this season. But right now it sounds like, it's kind of open-ended. Is that the impression you got, Joe?
Yeah, it's sort of a unique situation because I think it was pretty clear that Terry Francona doesn't necessarily want to manage anywhere else. I think this is pretty much like maybe his destination and where he sees himself, but I can't see him wanting to manage anywhere else because of the way that he interacts with the front office. And you heard him say, how the franchise has treated him over the years. I think he feels like he owes it to the franchise and in turn, Chris Antonetti, Mike Chernoff sort of owe it to him as well. They feel that way. So it's a good relationship. I think that's the best way to look at it. Maybe not in terms of contract years or contract dollars or anything like that. But as long as Terry Francona wants to manage and is healthy and can manage, I think he's got that sort of like a it's not a great way to say it, but a blank check, just sort of the ability to say when he wants to stay or go on his own terms. And I think that's the best situation for both sides.
Yeah, really interesting. This wasn't the first an evergreen deal by Cleveland manager. Pat Corrales, when I first started covering the Indians, had the same a kind of a deal where his contract would just roll over every year. Peter Bravesi brought that in when he took over as president of the team, and Corrales managed what 4 or 5 years before he got fired, I think in 1987, I believe, maybe 88. But this seems a much more a successful union. Francona has taken Cleveland to the postseason 6 times, 4 division titles, a trip, one pennant, a trip to the World Series. And this season, may have been his best job in his 10 years in Cleveland.
Yeah. And, some of the things that he said sort of led you to believe that, he almost feels like there's maybe unfinished business, or, he sort of put in the work to sort of build this club up and go through this young season. And he wants to stick around and see it pay off. I mean, what would be the sense for Terry Francona, taking a team full of, 24-year-olds to a 92 win season, and then have somebody else come in behind him and take them to the postseason again and maybe win it all with them? I think he wants to really see how far this group of young Guardians players can go.
Yeah, and I think their enthusiasm, the way they played, just the unexpected results that we saw from Stephen Kwan and Oscar Gonzalez and Andres Jimenez. I think that energized Francona. He was in the dugout wire to wire this year after 2 years of of, you know, really missing big parts of the season with health problems. And I think, you know, he wants to, like you said, see this through, Joe, or at least, you know, see this team improve.
The meeting where they finally sort of like worked out how this, you know, was going to work going forward, I guess, took place in Kansas City, you know, with about a month ago in the season. And Antonetti and Chernoff sort of walked into his office. I guess there's a, it says he was sweating. Tito said that his armpits were sweaty. He was all discombobulated, and there was a hamburger sitting on his laptop on his desk that that Antonetti said had to be cleared out of the way in order to sort of get down to brass tacks and hammer out how this was going to work. But they said the meeting took all of 5 minutes, and they all seemed to be on the same page. So, you know, it might not be that easy to negotiate with players, but when you and your manager are on the same page like that, it makes for a pretty easy negotiation.
Yeah, I think, you know, it sounded similar to, you know, what Tito and, you know, and I think Antonetti and Mark Shapiro did, you know, the first time around when he signed. He really didn't know what kind of deal he wanted. I think this was his first extension. He didn't know what kind of deal he wanted. You know, he went to Chris and to Shapiro, and they basically, you know, told him how to negotiate a deal. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, Tito's got an agent somewhere. Somebody's whispering in his ear. But, you know, he's kind of, it sounds like he's flying by the seat of his pants. So, you know, it must, you know, I think he's in a pretty good financial spot.
Yeah, and you know, I the last thing that Terry Francona should have to worry about is the dollar figures on anything like that. And I don't think a lot was sort of made about that. It's more about the fit and the comfortability, and you know, the willingness and ability for Tito to stay healthy and stay out there in the dugout and managing this club. And then we did talk about, you know, he there were times when he contemplated during the season, you know, hey, am I gonna do this? Am I gonna come back next year? And I think he said the resounding thing is he said it's human nature, because you get tired, you're on the road, and sometimes you have a lot of time to think to yourself in hotels and all that. And he said he was just being honest with him, but he ultimately arrived at the conclusion, yeah, I still want to come back.
Yeah, I think he, you know, like we were saying before, this team kind of, you know, caught his attention, energized him. He sees potential in this team, and you know, I think that energized him, and you know, put a, you know, it just made him want to, you know, to come back next year and see just how far they can go. They went a lot farther than people expected this year. The wild card, swept the wild card round, took the Yankees to five games in the ALDS. So you know, the future is really bright for this club, Joe. I think this might be the best group of prospects and young, you know, young players, young professional players, and big league players that they've had since, you know, 94, 95, when Lofton and Alomar and Baerga and Bell and those guys were all kind of brought together by John Hart and Dan O'Dowd. It's I think this is a really, really exciting group. And I think Francona, you know, kind of recognizes that.
Yeah, you don't want to jump off the train just when it's getting to the good part, I guess. We were also given updates on the Jose Ramirez injury that's going to require surgery in the offseason, and a couple of other injuries. Let's run through them here quickly. Jose is going to have surgery on that torn ulnar collateral ligament sometime in early November. They said that, you know, what was sort of revealed in that was the conversation that Jose had with Terry Francona when the club was in L.A. and they sort of got the details from the doctors after the MRI on what was going on with his thumb. It was sort of one of those situations where, well, it's torn. You can either have surgery now and miss the rest of the season, or, you know, you sort of tolerate the pain and gut your way through it. And Tito said Jose walked into his office. He said, hey, not only am I not having surgery, I'm playing tomorrow and I'm going to be in the lineup. And he was in the lineup every day after that. Just a testament to Jose's toughness and his willingness to just go out there and leave it all out on the field for this club.
Yeah, definitely. You look at his numbers, and yes, he took, they dipped in the second half after the break because of this injury. But still, overall, the total production of this season is amazing. What, 280, 28, 29 home runs, career high 126 RBIs, career high in at bats, ties a career high in games played. Joe, this guy was into it. He was in it for the long haul. He wins a postseason game, that the two-run homer against the Rays, hits 400 in the ALDS. I mean, even with swinging a bat one-handed, basically, he's still a pretty darn good hitter.
Yeah, we'll do deep dives into the numbers on Jose's season and what it all meant after the injury and sort of his productivity. His hard hit percentage took a real dip after July, and it was pretty evident in that. Tito was asked about letting him participate in the home run derby, but sort of insisting that he only swing right-handed because, left-handed, the power wasn't going to be there. Tito said, how do you tell a guy no? How do you say no to a kid who's given everything to the franchise that he can't compete in that home run derby? He let him go out there and perform even though he didn't win it. Just the sacrifices made by Jose Ramirez, sort of they're gonna live on, I think. And just if he had had that surgery, if he had decided, hey, no, I'm bailing and I'm gonna have that surgery, we're not talking about a division title. We're not talking about a postseason run. And we're talking about a franchise with a lot more question marks than answers that it eventually found throughout the season.
Yeah, I mean, he signed that 7-year, $141 million contract at the beginning of the season. It would have been very, very easy to say no mas and get the surgery done, take the rest of the year off. But anyone who has watched Ramirez play over 7-8 years, his career in Cleveland, knows he's not that kind of player. He wants to play. He likes to play. He wants to be on the field. And he realizes his, status on this ball club, his importance to this ball club. And even if he wasn't, if he was 80% or 75%, it was still, that was still an important part of him, of that team, him being in the lineup, him playing third base every day, him batting second or third every day. That was a key part to the team's success.
We also found out from Chris Antonetti something we didn't know. Andrés Giménez had played the second half of September and on through the playoffs with a non-displaced fracture in his right thumb. That took place during, sometime in September. And, you could kind of tell Giménez's productivity sort of dropped off there. Late in the season and definitely in the playoffs. He had that 1-5 strikeout game against Tampa Bay. He wasn't necessarily swinging the bat. I mean, this is a guy who was hit 25 times. It set a new franchise record and was second in all of baseball in hit by pitch. Maybe something has to change there with the approach next year. But Andrés Giménez, sort of we get an explanation as to why he sort of faded there at the end of the season.
Yeah, that was definitely revealing because, like you said, Joe, he kind of fell off the face of the earth, late in September and in the postseason. He just wasn't the same guy. We didn't see the power, that we'd seen, especially in the first half of the season. But the good thing is it doesn't need surgery. It's non-displaced. And it didn't sound like it was going to take a lot of rehab or anything like that, Joe. It sounded like he's going to be ready for spring training. Now, he's a guy that's, committed to playing for Venezuela in the WBC, and I wonder if that'll have any effect on that.
Yeah, and it might just serve to get him going a little bit more as well. So the opportunity there for him to play, hopefully, you always hold your breath when guys are committed to play in those in the World Baseball Classic. We'll see how that turns out. Anthony Gose, another guy, they updated. They said he's still recovering from Tommy John surgery. Nothing really new to report there. He's going to continue his rehab here in Cleveland and then head out to Arizona in the next week or so. Nick Sandlin getting a plasma injection in his right shoulder, where he suffered that teres major strain in the wild card round. They said that, he'll do therapy 6 to 8 weeks, and he shouldn't be restricted when he gets to spring training. And then Josh Naylor, he's going up to Green Bay to visit with Dr. Robert Anderson, who performed the surgery on his right ankle. Just sort of kick the tires and make sure everything's still where it needs to be with him. Didn't really sound like there was any additional intervention needed, but he's expected to have a normal offseason. And I think that's the biggest plus for Josh Naylor. He can focus on just his conditioning, maybe drop a few pounds and get stronger and come back next season and not really have to just gut it out like through every day. And every time he ran the bases, you just sort of held your breath with Josh Naylor last year. Hopefully next year he can come in. Maybe we'll be writing that old spring training cliche, best shape of my life, about Josh Naylor. Hopefully we see that be the case.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he was another guy that kind of played on one leg the whole season. Still had career highs in home runs and RBIs. A clean bill of health will certainly help Naylor's offseason conditioning.
A couple of broad stroke sort of topics to sort of cover and hit there. Antonetti did mention, just like last offseason, that he expects there to be a little bit of financial flexibility for the club. It's, it won't be Dodgers or Yankees type money that they'll be able to spend on the payroll, but within the systems and the constraints of their own sort of market and what they expect to be able to do, it's not like they'll be running around crying poor all offseason. Now that they know that they've got a winning club here, they can maybe look to sort of invest some resources in it.
Yeah, they're in a great spot, Joe. We've talked about this before. Young, intriguing big league roster, prospects coming up through the pipeline, and some money to spend. And it's not like they have to add 4, 5, 6 guys. You add one or two guys to this 26, 28 man roster, whatever it is. That's what they need. They put themselves in position to improve this team with maybe one or two additions. And I think it's going to be an exciting winter, and hopefully they're able to pull it off.
They only have one free agent. That's Austin Hedges. I think, both sides will probably explore all their options on that regard. But as far as negotiating contracts with current players, Shane Bieber, Ahmed Rosario were both mentioned as guys who are, there's potential there. We've talked on this podcast a number of times about what we think the Bieber situation is. They don't necessarily discuss specifics about players during these kind of sessions, but I'm sure the Guardians would jump at the opportunity to offer Shane Bieber some sort of contract extension if he were willing to sit down and negotiate. We just haven't seen that there's any evidence that that's the case yet. Another player that was mentioned was Ahmed Rosario and the possibility of offering him some sort of long-term deal. Very non-committal, I think the Guardians were in that regard. But they said, Tito said they like him. They said he's reliable. He's valuable in a lot of different ways. And, you really have to look and search for things to find that you don't like about a guy like Ahmed Rosario.
Yeah, he's in his, just finished his fifth year. He's 1 year away from free agency. So, that's going to be, I think they could they'd have to, it's got to be a 2 or 3 year deal, Joe, to get it, to even get his interest. I think he's really improved his market value. Would he like to stay here? It seems like him and Jose are really close. I think it'd be a good fit for him to stay. But I think, you know, when the, with free agency calling, it's tough. It's tough if you don't really kind of blow these guys away. And we'll have to see, you know, but he's certainly had a good run with Cleveland.
We also got to mention just very briefly about, you know, the quality of the defense that was played at the end of the year, evidenced by the five Gold Glove finalists. Oscar Gonzalez's progression and his development and you know, what the expectations are for him next year with the outfield. You know, Tito said the outfield looks like it's pretty much set for next year, if that's the case. And, you know, interesting to hear their thoughts on that. A couple of players like Will Brennan, the young guys that were mentioned. Obviously, there was a whole discussion about Stephen Kwan and the unexpected surprise that he provided this year. Just in general, they covered a lot of different topics, and like you said, it's a pretty good position to be in if you're in the Guardians front office right now.
Yeah, you know, they've got the best of both worlds: a fertile farm system, you know, a strong big league club made up of young players that aren't, you know, aren't making a whole lot of money. But have shown, you know, that they can play in the big leagues. You know, they have the ability to go out and add some pieces. So, you know, they're kind of sitting in the catbird seat right now.
All right. Well, we've got plenty to discuss coming out of that meeting. We will pick it up next week, beginning Monday, off-season hot stove editions of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast coming your way all through the winter. So keep it here on cleveland.com. And we'll be back with myself and Hoynsey all the way up until spring training.